Good morning. I'm speaking with Reverend Dr. Liz Theo Harris, who is director of the Kairos Center for Religions, Rights, and Social Justice, and co-chair with Reverend William Barber of the Poor People's Campaign, A National Call for Moral Revival. Welcome to KBOO, Liz Theo Harris.
Thanks so much for having me and for the interest and the work that we're doing.
Good. Over 50 years ago, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. and many others launched a Poor People's Campaign to tackle the pervasive problems of systemic racism, poverty, and militarism. And by many measures, as you have indicated, these interrelated problems are worse today than they were back in 1968, with close to half of all Americans living in or on the brink of poverty, and over half of children in the United States impoverished. A few years ago, you and Reverend William Barber revived the Poor People's Campaign. Tell us what led to this revival and how the movement is doing.
For many, many years, poor, homeless, uninsured, low-income, low-wage workers have been organizing in communities across the country, whether it's moving into abandoned houses that they've been evicted from, whether it's having Medicaid marches, all kinds of creative and bold organizing. And folks kept on saying, in this country that has 250,000 people a year dying from poverty and inequality, 50% of U.S. children, even before this pandemic, experiencing food insecurity at some point, 80% of the population at some point in our lives, experiencing poverty and precarity. We need a movement that brings people together across all the lines that divide us. And so the Poor People's Campaign, A National Call for Moral Revival, build on the work that leaders throughout history and throughout our communities have been doing for a long time. We take up the issues of systemic racism, systemic poverty, ecological devastation, militarism in the war economy, and this distorted narrative of white Christian nationalism that have really grown and deepened over the past 50 years since Dr. King and the welfare rights leaders and indigenous Native nations, the American Federation of Jewish Folk. I mean, there were all kinds of folks that were a part of the 68 campaign, but our coalition is great and broad now as well as we try to build a movement from the bottom up.
And you talk about this as a fusion movement. What is important and effective as a fusion movement to radically transform society?
So when we talk about fusion, we're going back to other moments in U.S. history when poor white people and poor black people and poor Latino people and people across all the divides of this nation, but especially race, especially religion, especially geography, have actually in this nation's history come together and built powerful coalitions and alliances and been able to win progressive, effective, inclusive policy for everyone. So going back to the abolitionist movement and the period of Reconstruction after that, you had these Reconstruction fusion movements in states like North Carolina and other states across the Union. And so what we're saying today is that a similar movement is needed and necessary to reconstruct society again, that what poor people of all races, genders, sexualities, faith beliefs have in common is the need and the demand to have living wages, to have universal health care, to have decent education, to have affordable housing, and just the basic necessities of life. And so we're building such a movement, a fusion movement, that says we might have to be in our silos for some of the organizing work we're doing. There are particular issues that impact some folks the greatest, and let's fight along those lines. But let's also come together in a powerful, broad-scale, bold, visionary movement that crosses these lines of division and difference and brings people together, fuses people into a powerful force. I mean, there are 140 million people in this country who are poor or one small emergency away from deep poverty. And that is people of all walks of life. And so what does it look like for us to make these unlikely alliances and build a power of people from below.
And we can't solve these interlocking evils of systemic racism, poverty, the war economy, and ecological devastation until there is a radical redistribution of economic and political power. And how does that happen? How does this movement bring about that kind of radical change?
So indeed, we're talking about, you know, radical, revolutionary, revolution of values kind of work going on right here. We've said in the Poor People's Campaign that we have two goals, and we'll have these goals until we're able to achieve them. The first is to change the narrative, to get this nation talking and acting around the issues that affect the majority of us the majority of the time, the real, you know, what we call the moral issues of the day, and that's healthcare and living wages and voting rights and immigrant rights. But in order to change the narrative, we must shift these narrators, like the hearing the stories, the solutions, the demands coming up out of communities. And that to do that and to enact real change, real radical change in this nation, we need to build the power amongst 140 million and growing poor and low-income people. And so that takes many forms, right? We're talking about a broad-scale social movement. Right now, we're approaching a really important historic election in this nation. And what the Poor People's Campaign is working on is we must do more. More stands for mobilizing, organizing, registering, educating people for a movement that votes. But we know that it doesn't just stop on election day, and the voting power of poor and low-income people is a very important way to impact the power structures and transform from below. But it has to be coupled with, you know, organizing and protesting and building what we call, learning this from our brothers and sisters at the U.S.-Mexico border, permanently organized communities, right? Not folks that come together, you know, because one unjust policy is being proposed, but where our communities across all these different lines of difference are at the ready, both to react to regressive policies and also to put forward the proactive solutions to the problems people are having. So we need to build that power and organize. And that means we have to, you know, be meeting people's needs as we're advocating for significant policy victories. And what we're seeing across the country, again, is that this is exactly what's happening. You know, I think over the summer we've seen this rise in protests around racial and economic justice and inequality issues. You know, so many of those kind of protests are being led by those that are most impacted, who, you know, we have this saying in our work, whose backs are against the wall and all we can do is push, right? And this is a really important part of transforming society from the ground up. But one of the things that we say in our work is that we can't just curse the darkness. We can't just tell all the things that are wrong, but that we have to come forward with proactive, bold solutions to those problems. And so we in the Poor People's Campaign have put together a Poor People's Moral Budget. We've put together and launched on June 20th, when we held a mass Poor People's Assembly and Moral March on Washington, we launched a Jubilee, Poor People's Jubilee policy platform.
Well, I was going to say, Liz Theo Harris, that has been another exciting dimension of the summer's protests. The fact that Black Lives Matter and many campaigns have been focusing on the costs of policing and how we might convert all of this, all of the resources devoted to policing and incarceration to other social goods. And I'm glad you bring up the Jubilee platform and the Poor People's Moral Budget about how we might envision some different ways of utilizing resources to fund people's issues. And we've had Ashiq Sadiq from the National Priorities Project on the show, and he provided some examples of these trade-offs, how just by slightly cutting the military budget, we could, you know, provide free college education and healthcare and so on. Do you want to say something about these trade-offs and how we could reimagine reimagine utilizing the nation's resources to put towards people's goals.
So I think what we've seen in this pandemic is something that we knew before it, which is that when we raise that idea of we need to have universal health care and we need living wage jobs and the whole host of broad and bold policy platform issues that we put forward, we often are countered with this, but you know, you're asking for too much. But what we've seen in this pandemic is that overnight, trillions of dollars have been found to bail out the richest and the wealthiest corporations in our society. And yet millions, tens of millions of people are being told to kind of fend for ourselves. This lie of scarcity, the lie that this is as good as it gets, can't do any better. If we wanted to, you know, we have to choose between healthcare and living wage jobs. We have to choose between a decent education and a healthy environment, they're just that, they're lies. And so indeed, what we've put forward in the budget, in this Jubilee platform, is that if we were to cut this nation's budget, of military budget, you know, we live in a country that spends 53 cents of every discretionary dollar on the military, and less than 15 cents on healthcare, education, anti-poverty programs, and living wages combined, right? So if we were to cut this budget in half, we still have a larger military budget than hundreds of countries in the world combined, and it would actually make the nation safer. If we were to have a fair taxation system, if we were to have a system that actually goes back to even what the taxes were in the 80s and the 90s, we could have a lot more money for social programs, for the things that actually the majority of people in this country, you know, need and want. If we relieve debts that people just can simply not afford, right, stuff like student debt. Again, in the pandemic, we found the first week of it that the Federal Reserve materialized $1.5 trillion just to bail out Wall Street. Well, that $1.5 trillion is more than all of student debt combined, right? So if we can find $1.5 trillion in 1 week to bail out the very richest among us, why can't we forgive the debts of students and actually give them a leg up in society as they go into the economy, into the workplace? And then the fourth part of this kind of trade-off and where we can fund such a program like our agenda is by investing in healthcare, investing in living wage jobs. I mean, what we know is that if we were to raise immediately the minimum wage to $15 an hour, that would bring hundreds of millions of dollars, about $300 million, into the economy. That's going to be good for everybody. That's going to help small businesses. That's going to help you know, communities and community development organizations. And so what we're saying is that it doesn't have to be that we have 700 people dying a day in this, the richest country in the history of the world, when we could actually just, you know, cut the military some, have a fair taxation system, invest in the programs that actually matter, and forgive debts to individual consumers who just simply can't afford them. That would lift everybody up. You know, we have a saying in our work: when you lift from the bottom, everybody rises, right? When you organize the policies and legislation and issues of around the poorest and the most marginalized, then you have everybody in, nobody out. It redounds to the benefit of all. It's not that this is we're going to help these poor people over here, but we're going to actually make this country and this democracy stronger for everyone if we don't ignore those that are suffering right now.
And I might mention that the Poor People's Campaign on its website has lots of great resources and the details of the Jubilee platform, the moral budget, and a state-by-state list of these trade-offs. For example, I'm just looking right now at Oregon's the data that you have on Oregon. And last year, we apparently sent about $7 billion to the Pentagon. And even though it's difficult for people to wrap their head around these abstract figures, as you point out on the website, that could have created 120,000 infrastructure jobs in Oregon. healthcare for over 1 million people in Oregon, and full scholarships for every college student in the state. So there's such wealth that could be redirected with just knowledge about these kinds of comparisons that most Americans do support. Finally, Liz Theoharis, just recently the Poor People's Campaign released a new report called Unleashing the Power of Poor and Low-Income Americans, Changing the Political Landscape. Do you want to say something about this recent report?
Yeah, so we just launched this, and it's showing that if the poor and low-income people of this nation, who make up about one quarter of our electorate, but made up about one third of the people that stayed out of the last presidential election, were to be able to, you know, be inspired, enlivened, enlarged, to be able to organize and show up and vote, you know, not for particular candidates, but around the issues that impact people the most, that could actually completely change the political landscape. That in 15 states, that poor and low-income people, in Wisconsin 1%, in Michigan 1%, in Wisconsin 4%, in Pennsylvania 4%, and in North Carolina, you know, 19%. It's that many more voters who are eligible to vote but haven't voted in the past previous elections were to turn out, that is bigger than the margin of error, the margin of victory for the different both Senate and presidential elections. And so it's showing that what we have is an impoverished democracy, a democracy where poor and low-income voters have been disenfranchised, they've been ignored, our politicians have run from them and those issues, but that if we were to put them front and center in the nation's policy debates and in our elections, that we could transform the whole society and change the whole voting process. And so, you know, I encourage folks to check out this report. We have it on the Poor People's Campaign website. But the fact that poor people are important in terms of changing the electoral maps and the kind of national political landscape.
Thank you so much, Liz Theoharis, for joining us today on KBOO and for your important work with the Poor People's Campaign. This is Laurie Mercier for the Old Mole Variety Hour. I've been speaking with Reverend Dr. Liz Theoharis, director of the Kairos Center and co-chair with Reverend William Barber of the Poor People's Campaign, and we'll post a link to the Poor People's Campaign website, its many resources, reports, and actions on the Old Mole page on KBOO.fm.